They don't come here to attack us because we're rich and we're free. They come and they attack us because we're over there.
We don't need to go populist left or populist right. We don't need to embrace neo-Marxism or neo-fascism, these disastrous movements from the 20th century. Turns out the answer is pretty much our Bill of Rights, our story. Embrace freedom. That's the answer.
And if the LP has a purpose, it's not to put people to sleep. It's to wake them up.
We're here because we love liberty. And we're here because we hate injustice. We are here to save mankind. We are here to fight.
Join us, the Libertarian Party, in perhaps the most exciting, grandest endeavor in history, the restoration of American liberty.
Ideas spread, they can't stop them. An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Decentralized Revolution, a podcast from the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus and Mises PAC. My name's Aaron and I'm your host. Our guest today is Anthony Welty, who I think is one of the strongest libertarian candidates in the country this year. He's running for state insurance commissioner in Washington, which is an office that I really knew nothing about. I was actually pretty surprised to learn just how much insurance regulation costs consumers. Anthony has a really well thought out libertarian case for his campaign and what he could do to bring a lot of benefits to insurance consumers in Washington. So I hope you enjoy my interview right now with Anthony Welty. Anthony Welty, welcome to Decentralized Revolution.
Hi, hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's afternoon here. It's morning out in Washington. And you're the candidate for state insurance commissioner in the state of Washington. And I'm from Ohio. I've never heard of that office. I don't know how many other states have it. But why don't you tell us what that does and why a libertarian would be good in that spot?
Yeah, well, don't excuse me. Don't worry, you're not the only person that doesn't know what that position is, even here in Washington. And it's one of the reasons why I picked it. You know, we as libertarians, we know there's a lot of government reform that's necessary, a lot of policy reform. But if there's positions in government that have power and authority over our lives and you don't even know that they exist, that's a problem. So exposing this position and educating the voters on the importance of it has been really impactful and an important part of why I chose this race for state insurance commissioner. Now, in Washington, this is an elected position. All 50 states have some form of this department, but I believe only 10 or 11 states are actually electable. Or elected as opposed to appointed. So we here in Washington, we are lucky in that sense that we get to pick our masters. But in Washington, we also have one party rule, and one guy has had control of this office for 20 years. And it's not a legislative office. He doesn't get to write laws, or the position doesn't get to write laws, but it is a consumer protection agency. And what's happened here in the state of Washington is we've had one set of ideas, one set of principles and control for so long that anybody that thinks slightly different or wants slightly different has been left behind. So this job is tasked with regulating insurance companies within the existing rules in the state. That means approving new policy types or denying policy types, approving or denying rate changes, going after people that perform fraud against insurance companies, and a whole slew of tasks that are really behind the scenes, bureaucratic in nature. And, you know, my job as a libertarian running for this office is to start to just expose what that position is and what it can do to the average person's life.
So is it every type of insurance, life insurance, health insurance, home insurance, yep, all of that?
Yep, everything in between and up and down there. So, you know, the health insurance is one of the major topics, of course, around the country. So I've been focused on that a lot. But then there's other regulatory reform for things that affect your car insurance, your home insurance. And each of these little things starts adding up the extra cost that somebody pays for their insurance premiums. And as we're going through a bit of an economic crisis here now, where people are, you know, living on unemployment checks or, you know, still waiting for them here in the state of Washington, you know, every penny counts, you know, every $10 counts, and it just adds up over time. So my goal is to get in there, reduce cost as low as possible, as quick as possible, and also increase flexibility and diversity within the insurance market so that each individual citizen in Washington can have better insurance.
So I would think that if they have the power to approve new types of policies and things like that, that the prices for insurance are probably artificially high because new competitors and new innovations can't come in. Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, it's definitely one aspect of things. And here's a great example. Let's say a car insurance company has a department meeting, right? They come up with a cool new idea on a way they can do car insurance, right? They think that they can reduce prices for, you know, let's say 20% of their customers, right? It's like, we've got this cool new product. We think it'll be great for you know, Sue and Bob over on Main Street, right? When they want to start selling that policy, they have to get approval through the state insurance commissioner's office. And Washington is known for being the slowest and usually last state to get any new idea, which means our consumers in Washington are paying more for insurance premiums where other states are paying less. We can do some things to get out of the way there and to make it easier to streamline things, to remove the bureaucracy that's been placed over the industry and really put consumers and business back in control of how the market works.
What's the purported reason for this office and these types of regulations? I mean, we know as libertarians that, you know, stifling competition to help the people who are already in the business and to, you know, keep new innovations from going and collecting revenue. I'm sure there's fees associated with some of this. So what is the purported reason? What would they, someone, I assume the Democrat who's current office holder.
Yeah.
What has he said or what would he say about your ideas to deregulate things? What bad things does he say would happen?
Well, the role of this department is tasked with consumer protection. That's what's written into law for what this job is supposed to do. But like I alluded to earlier, the state insurance commissioner has for a long time now, you know, essentially protected his group set of ideas at the expense of anybody that thinks differently. So, you know, conservatives in this state that maybe want a different type of insurance have been forced to have what the Democrat Party wants. And that's what's great as a libertarian is we want both sides to get what they want when it comes to insurance, right? Just as long as they don't force anybody else to associate with those plans. You know, the disguise of what the insurance commissioner has been doing is the typical rhetoric that, you know, you can't be trusted to watch out for yourself, that all free market capitalism is evil, and that if I don't step in here, you know, the world's going to come to an end. And without these regulation, things are going to be even worse than they already are. And I challenge the incumbent commissioner to say, when was the last time rates got lower over the last 20 years? Of all the things that you've done for the last 20 years, do people have more choice? Do they have more flexibility? Do they have cheaper rates? And the answer is categorically no. Things have continued to get worse the further we restrict the market and removed any iota of diversity. Which is funny when we know that we're talking about a Democrat incumbent who is theoretically all about diversity and progressiveness. And really what he's done is the exact opposite. He stifled the market to the point to where poor people have harder time affording insurance and people that are on the fringe to get further marginalized.
Right. So let's talk about health insurance, which is always, it's a big topic everywhere. And then seems like all elections. What specific things could you change or remove to enhance consumer choice and options and outcomes.
Yeah. So, you know, healthcare and health insurance are two different things, right? And whenever we get into this conversation about health insurance, I like to try to mention that when I remember to, you know, we need to do two things. We need to fix the cost of healthcare on the front end. And then we also need to reduce the cost of insurance on the back end so that at both stops, things aren't needlessly expensive. But in specifically in relationship to health insurance, there's some real simple things we could do. Number one, we need to abolish all taxes on health insurance. The politicians that are in office, they like to say things like they want affordable health care, they want affordable health insurance. But when they tax it to the tune of billions and billions of dollars every year, you and I know that that money ultimately comes out of the cost of everyday people's wallets. So we need to abolish taxes on health insurance. We also need to open up the market so people can buy insurance, not only across state lines, but also against national borders. You know, insurance is nothing more than a financial product. If somebody's wants to purchase a policy from, you know, let's say Idaho and they live in Washington, or Texas and they live in Washington, or God forbid, you know, maybe Europe or Japan, right, that has coverage that they want at a price that they can afford, we should have the freedom and flexibility to be able to do that. So that's something that I'm going to be advocating for. Initially, we're going to aim small, miss small. I'm going to try to work with the Pacific Northwest regions, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon. I think some reciprocal laws there would make sense from a pragmatic standpoint, knowing what the libertarian utopia is. And then I'm also going to try to reach out to folks, some maybe more red-leaning states with insurance commissioners that may be supportive of these ideas and just haven't had the political will to get it done. Okay. So we've got some plans in order, some things already in works, so that when I get elected in November, we're not just going after ideas, pie in the sky things that we've talked about, but that we have actual plans in place that help make me electable and right. will bring lower prices to people's insurance rates.
You mentioned taxation of insurance, health insurance policies. How much of the average Washingtonian's bill goes to taxes? You said billions of dollars. So how much is it actually increasing right on the top there?
Yeah, I mean, from looking at, you know, line item taxes to hidden taxes, I mean, it's almost impossible to say. And that's something that, you know, as we as libertarians know that there's so many taxes on things you don't even realize. You know, I talk about, let's go healthcare side of things for just a moment, and this affects the cost of insurance in some ways. They tax your medication, right? Here in Washington, we pay sales tax on aspirin for, you know, of all things. So if you get a headache, right. the government taxes you. Point of right. sale on your aspirin. You know, just in insurance in general, in all broad forms of insurance, the state of Washington, it's $600 million a year in taxes on insurance alone. And that's just the premium taxes. That's not all the B&O taxes that the insurance companies are paying, that the insurance agents are paying, or the and B&O taxes here in Washington is basically an overhead tax that businesses pay on a gross income, not even take home, which is ridiculous. Right. You know, so for example, they increased B&O taxes on small medical providers about a year and a half ago. So that means your mom and pop pediatrician, your mom and pop chiropractor, massage therapist, their cost of doing business and doing healthcare in Washington's gone up. So we're trying to expose each individual little issue so that people understand that it's not just, you know, the tax that the big business is paying, that ultimately that gets trickled down into everybody's pocketbooks, and that we ultimately pay out and makes our healthcare more expensive.
Right. Is there any way to make maybe to bring in some of these companies on your side of things, or is it one of those things where the big companies have kind of done the regulatory capture thing and they're resistant to reform? What's the business community's take on all this?
You know, I'm not in a lot of talks with the big insurance companies. I want to represent the actual individuals, which some of them work for those companies, and they all deserve to have a voice. This is a stark difference between, you know, the markets that we have today, which are full of regulatory capture, crony capitalism, you know, and all the things that we know are bad from the sense of lobbyist control and big business control over our life. The incumbent insurance commissioner takes about half of his money from corporate lobbyists and PACs. I take zero of my money from those people. But this is what's great about our ideas here. We can make things cheaper and make them more profitable.
Right.
Right. And the market will provide solutions to people that bring value to their lives. And the good companies will become more profitable. Right. And the bad companies will become less profitable. And that's what we want, because that means they're being held accountable to our needs, not just what the government has told them to do or the lobbyists have maybe aided and abetted in a controlled market. So I know a lot of insurance agents are frustrated. I know a lot of doctors are frustrated. I know a lot of different medical professionals are just tired of how broken the system is. And anyone that I talk to is encouraged and excited for my campaign, because they see things that are going to make their lives easier and more prosperous. So I think the business community at large has been very supportive of my campaign. I'm in a Chamber of Commerce debate with the Republican challenger here in a couple of days. That's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to do things that make business easier, make business cheaper, but that makes insurance better, and that'll make insurance more affordable. So everybody can come out on top here.
Right. Let's talk about, do you have any background in insurance before this?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that led me to running for this position is I am educated on it. I'm a property and casualty licensed agent in the state of Washington. I worked with life insurance extensively for a couple years as well, but always on the front lines, you know, dealing with consumers on a day-to-day basis that are having issues with claims and trying to get them paid, right? Giving them solutions that'll make their small business insurance more affordable and save them money so they can hire an extra employee or, you know, maybe get closer to hiring an employee anyways. So working on the front lines for the last 10 years in the insurance industry, I've seen the good, I've seen the bad, I've seen the ugly, and nobody else for decades here in the state of Washington has been able to do anything to fix it. And that's why I've dedicated the last 3 years of my life to running for this office. I've been traveling the state full time for 10, 11 months now, and I'm earning huge endorsements from it. I'm earning the trust and respect of voters because they've seen that I'm a real guy and that I'm out here willing to put in the hard work to actually earn their vote instead of just relying for a letter next to my name to get me elected.
Right. You mentioned endorsements. How are things looking as far as endorsements and also fundraising and things like that? Like who has endorsed you and who's giving money and how much and all that?
Yeah. So we've raised a little over $75,000. And we've got about another $5,000 or $8,000 coming in here in a couple of days. We just did a joint fundraiser with Joe Jorgensen. She flew into town for me, traveled the state with her for 2 days doing rallies and doing some fundraisers. So we're getting all that figured out today, actually, how much money we raised there. But it's huge. It's all grassroots. We're averaging $52 a donation right now. None of it from corporate lobbyists, you know, compared to the incumbent who's bought and paid for. 5% of his money comes from in-state of Washington. 99% of my money's from in-state.
Right.
Now, the endorsements we're really excited about. there's an organization here in Washington called Fair Choice Washington. It's a ranked choice group, ranked choice voting group in Washington. They endorsed my campaign. Or rather, let me rephrase that. They are a nonprofit, so they can't do endorsements. They've essentially recommended me. I was also endorsed by a Patriot organization out here called Puget Sound Patriots, a Hunters Heritage Council group, which represents 65,000 sportsmen and women. And then I've got major radio endorsements from a radio talk show host. I'm endorsed by city and county council members all across the state of Washington. Frankly, I'm one of the highest endorsed candidates in the entire state right now.
Yeah,
and that's not just my race. That's all political races. We've been putting in work.
That's really amazing. You say you've been running for this for 3 years, so you've been really pounding the pavement and going to these groups and talking to them. Is that what's doing it?
Yeah, and most importantly, being consistent, which is what is incredible about our libertarian ethos, right? The statement of principles that we decide to abide by and how unwavering we are in those. And people have appreciated that I've been consistent, that I've said the same thing repeatedly and that I'm calling out things that they've also had issues with. I picked a good race here. Where it's, insurance commissioner is kind of a blank slate. I get to go into a lot of conversations and just have a non-confrontational conversation about how we can make insurance better in Washington, because nobody knew that the position existed. So they don't have preconceived ideas on, maybe what the role is supposed to do. And as you and I both know, not everybody knows, and very few people know what a libertarian is.
Right.
So I've really had a clean whiteboard to just go in and have healthy dialogue about solutions. It's been non-divisive. I've been blown away with how positive the campaign has been in this political, mess that we have right now. So it's been great. We got a ton of endorsements. There's more coming. I'm really excited for what our August 4th primary is going to bring. We've got a chance to be one of the highest vote getters in the state of Washington, and really go into our general election in November with a full head of steam.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the primary here in a second. How are you identifying potential donors, and then how are you converting them into donors? Is it emails? Is it events? Is it what's working?
Social media is huge now with the lockdown, of course. And we remained stagnant for just a little bit when the lockdown first hit. But since then, we've raised more in the last 100 days than we had in the prior 2 years, probably, maybe a year and a half. So a lot of online stuff and just being consistent with reaching out to people that I've had positive interaction with and just, letting them know how much their support is going to mean and what we're spending the money on. One of the things I'm doing here is we've been on the road full time for 11 months is instead of staying at hotels for $100 or $200 a night, we've been traveling in a travel trailer and I'm literally camping my way through the state. Mm-hmm. Our overall head cost, even including gas and hauling the thing, is about $60 a day. Wow. So I can do way more on way less. And people appreciate that because everybody knows that the average person has to live on a budget, and there's nobody really in government really emulating that right now. And I'm literally living it on the campaign trail, right, blatantly for everybody to see. And, we go as far as even posting our receipts some days to really show people, hey, this is what we've been spending money on and this is why.
Yep. Have you done any paid media?
No. Okay.
No commercials or anything like that?
No, not up to this point. We might do a few this next week now that the ballots are in the mail. But at this point, it's been all grassroots on the ground, literally doing small meetings, meeting people, and then a lot of social media. We average probably 100, 120,000 hits a month alone on Facebook, which for some pages isn't a lot for an insurance commissioner's Facebook page. I'm the biggest commissioner's page in the entire country. That's bigger than all the actual commissioner's websites.
Right.
So I get more reach on my social media than this page has probably had in its entire lifetime.
Wow. That's great.
It's a resource, right? And it's a resource that we can use to educate people on the role once I'm in office, that we can even work as a bit of kind of a government watchdog. Right. I can be in committee hearings and then publishing it more on Twitter and social media. So people are truly understanding what bills are going on behind the scenes that affect insurance. And right now, the existing department isn't exposing any of that unless it's their one or two topics that they really want to get pushed through.
Right. Let's talk about the August 4th primary. What's the primary format in Washington? And have you done polling? Do you have a sense of how things are going to go?
Yeah. So we are what we consider a top two state in the state of Washington. It's not the worst set up other than we do pay for two elections each year. So yay, taxpayer money for that. But essentially, it's an open election. So our governor's race, for example, there's 37 candidates Whoa. From all political parties. Unfortunately, no Libertarian this year. But the top two vote getters, whether it's two Democratic Socialists or whether it's two Republicans or two Libertarians or one of two different parties, doesn't matter. The top two go into the general election. In my race, there's three of us. There's the 40-year career politician incumbent I'm running against that's a Democrat, and then a late-filing Republican candidate who has zero chance of winning the election. In fact, if anything, he's stealing votes from me now, because I've been on the campaign trail earning the support of the voters. The incumbents only raised about $20,000. I've raised $75,000 going on $90,000. Right. And the Republican hasn't raised a dime. There was a newspaper poll, a reader poll that was done last year when it was just the two of us on the ballot. I was at 64% of the poll before we farmed that out to our Libertarian supporters. So that was an organic reader poll in kind of a purple area of the state. Okay. And we were at 64%. I've debated the Republican candidate in a conservative forum. They then endorsed me after I won the straw poll at like 89%. And two of the four votes that went against me were Patel and I think his mother or his brother or somebody in there. So we have the momentum here. The only thing that I'm really running up against now is all Libertarians know is that automatic down ballot D vote or R vote. Because I'm running against the incumbent Democrat, for the last little while, we haven't spent a ton of outreach time on known Democrat voters. We've focused more on the right side of the aisle simply because of who we're running against. And because of it, the Republicans, even though there's a Republican on the ballot, most of them are supporting me. So this is actually going to be a very interesting election. In 2016, the Libertarian on the ballot got 7.5%, about 100,000 votes without putting out a ton of outreach. Now I know the Republican voters in the state at large are supportive of my campaign. So we're really going to see where do those vote totals come in, right? Do we end up at, you know, double what the last guy get? Do we end up with triple or quadruple? My goal is to finish in first place in the primary election. I'm the only guy out there saying I actually want the job. And I'm the only guy actually doing outreach. So I'm not shooting for second place to just beat the Republican. I believe that I have the best ideas to take first place in the general election. And you know, right now, what media we're getting, which has been limited, is favorable to my campaign. They haven't done any hit jobs on me. I think they actually, some of the left-leaning media here might actually hope I win, because then I beat the Republican, right? So it's exciting. This is an exciting time for the Libertarian Party and for this election. We got 2 weeks left to really just drive the ball home. And if we come out with a really good vote total on August 4th, this is going to be a heck of a fun summer, man.
Right.
Because we'll be kind of, you know, free rolling, so to speak, with, you know, just getting to go out and do what we do best.
So you've been at this for 3 years, you said. That is a dedicated Libertarian, if I've ever heard of one. What made you a Libertarian? When did that happen? And when did you... And there's a lot of Libertarians who aren't involved with the party and running for office and things like that. So tell me about your Libertarian evolution to where you are now.
Yeah, and I continue to evolve. You know, the joke about, you know, every 6 months, you know, you grow in your Libertarianism, and maybe some of us just get off at different stops. Like, that's been really true for me. I came into the party as a Gary Johnson Libertarian. You know, in 2008, I voted for Obama. I lived in downtown Seattle. I was a liberal. I voted for Obama, but by 2010, I'd realized that half of what he ran on, the promises he made, were already showing false. And it really ticked me off. And I started doing more research, and Obamacare is what actually turned me political and really got me to walk away. And I literally, I Googled political parties. I read about the Constitutional Party. I read about Roseanne Barr running for president. Right. I read about the Libertarian Party. And I identified with the Libertarian kind of platform that was on the Wikipedia page most. I was like, yeah, this looks like it's a little bit of everything, right? As far as, like, you know, I was realizing I wanted small government, and I didn't like the, you know, the mass surveillance and things. But I'd also, as a Democrat, I'd stand, you know, stood for things like gay marriage, right? Before I even knew what the Libertarian Party was. So, it just kind of was presented to me at a point in time where I was frustrated with government. I sought out additional information, and I wasn't a libertarian at that point in time, but I voted libertarian in 2012, continued to grow a bit as I became more and more frustrated with government, more and more frustrated with mainstream media and challenging the narratives more. I fell deeper into my desire to help Gary Johnson in 2016 is who I thought was the best presidential candidate. And I basically just got headstrong into it and haven't stopped since.
Right.
And I continuously learn from others in the party. I spent the first year or two literally just kind of listening to philosophy and kind of picking up what felt right to me. And now I identify as kind of a volunteerist, basically.
Yep.
With a touch of anarchist in me.
Right.
And get the state out of our lives and leave us the heck alone.
Yep. Tell me about the LP there in Washington. How have they supported your campaign? How have things been going over the last few years? Are they running other candidates this fall? How's that going?
Yeah, we have a couple of candidates across the state. I actually helped get ballot access fees waived this year. I networked with two other Democrats and two other Republicans and another Libertarian. So six of us from three political parties drafted a letter together, sent it to the governor, and got him to waive ballot access fees this year. So we got 12 other Libertarians on the ballot for free that most of them, I think maybe one of them would have filed regardless. So we've got 12 or 13 of us on the ballot this year. A couple people in heads up races. So it's going to be a fun election cycle for us. The party is growing. One of the reasons I picked this position beyond the fact, you know, the things I want to change is because I also wanted to give our state party a top of the ticket candidate to rally behind that could work up ballot with our presidential candidate and then down ballot throughout the state as well and provide some resources, encouragement to more local candidates that maybe don't have the same time to put into the race. And beyond that, the party's donated a couple $1,000 to me. They do as much as they can with what they have, right? We all know that our party needs to grow. We've got a lot of learning to do. We've got a lot of infrastructure to build. And that's part of my role here is to just provide some encouragement, provide some resources, help us learn through failure. We've learned a lot the last couple years. The campaign's a lot better now than it was 2 years ago. And I think the party's better now than it was 2 years ago.
What's the areas in the state where there's the most LP involvement?
King County has a big,
And that's big, Seattle, right?
Yep. And so King County is the eighth largest county in the country. So, you know, inherently that's going to be a busier point for us. Spokane County out here as well. Michael Pickens has been working on getting Spokane County up and running. And they just hosted a 150 person rally for Joe Jorgensen out there. And probably a, you know, 145 of those people maybe never been to a meeting before or a political rally. And the Snohomish County chapter, which is just north of Seattle, that's the chapter I founded in 2017. That chapter's running a couple of candidates as well. So we're doing the best we can. We've got some energy going right now. You know, like I said, Joe is just in town, so hopefully that lights a fire under people and gets us active doing some sine waves and doing some door knocking.
You mentioned getting the ballot access fees waived this year. Did you still have to petition to get on the ballot, or how do you get on out there?
Yeah, so it's an either or here in Washington. And so you can either collect signatures equal to the fee or you can pay the fee. So that was some of the rhetoric I used with the governor, when I spoke to him, was I said, hey, look, if you're going to make it illegal for us to collect signatures because of the COVID virus, then you need to also remove the fees, right? So people can get on the ballot fairly. And he was a little disingenuous. And of course, I didn't get any credit for this. And, we sent press releases, never got any media hits. But it was 3 days after I sent my proclamation to him that he waived the fees. But what he did was he made everybody sign under penalty of perjury that you are essentially broke and can't afford to pay the fees, which is not the intention. The intention was just to make it so everybody could get on the ballot, equally. And, it was really disingenuous. So I actually paid the fee anyways, because right. I had the campaign donations and I didn't want to give him the optic of calling me broke when I'm the most well-funded candidate in this race.
So how much was the fee and how many signatures would they say that corresponds to?
It was like $1,400 and 1,400 signatures. So I had always intended on collecting signatures. I had a couple of real big events planned in the 2 months leading up to election. So I was just going to collect signatures because the last thing I was going to do was give hard earned, donation money to the state government to just go waste on whatever pet project they wanted to. So when the lockdown happened and I knew that wasn't going to be possible, I had to pivot my spending. So instead of buying, $1,500 worth of yard signs or something, I had to do $1,500 to the state government, which was unfortunate, but we're still going to beat them and we're going to get in there and make some changes and then, make this stuff less common going forward.
Do you have any words for people who may be considering running as a Libertarian candidate on what things they need to think about, what works?
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, we need to stop beating up our candidates. And I've been mostly lucky. This hasn't affected me too much. But one thing I've learned as a candidate is no two races are the same. Okay. Each individual race jurisdiction you're in is going to have a different voting populace. It's going to have a different optic with what the issues are. And we need to trust especially the candidates and the activists that have earned our trust, that trust that they're going to do the best they can and choose as wisely as they can on how they run their race. And that might not always be easy to understand from an outside perspective, right? We need to give our candidates a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt, at least to the ones that we know have earned it. Right. So be kind to your Libertarian candidates, folks. If you haven't run for office before, you haven't lived in their specific jurisdiction, it might not always be easy to understand what their objective is. Advice for candidates. If you're thinking about running, maybe you're like, well, I got some bills I got to pay, a few things. So maybe I'll run in 3 or 4 years. Right. What I would encourage you to do is not necessarily do what I did, which was fill out the paperwork and say, I'm running for office 3 years from now. But you can act as if you're running for office by start going, like if you're going to run for city council meeting, you better be going to the school board meetings. You better be going to the city council meetings. You should be sitting in on different committee hearings, not every day or necessarily even every week, but as frequently as you can. Put it on your calendar that once a month, you're going to go to that city council meeting for the next 12 months. That'll help educate you on what the environment's like. It'll help make you more comfortable. You'll start seeing the same faces at these meetings and you can start networking and building relationship. Go to your PTA meeting, right? If you got a kid in school, go to your PTA meetings, right? Meet the other parents, right? We have to start immersing ourselves in our communities. That's first and foremost. If your community doesn't know you, like you, or trust you, your ideas are mostly worthless to them.
Right.
Okay. So that's the biggest advice I can tell people. And this isn't just running for office. This is our activists.
Right.
If you want people to buy into our ideas, we have to get people to respect us and trust us. So get to know your neighbors, host a community block party, right? Be the guy that helps the neighbor out, offers to help mow some grass, go to your city council meetings and start building from there. And then just in closing on that, don't pick, when you do decide to run, don't pick a race just to run a race. Pick a race that you think you're credible in, that you can make an impact in. And that doesn't necessarily mean win, right? Each, you know, there's sometimes maybe there's five to choose from. None of them are winnable, right? But be intentional with why you pick that and make sure that you're doing it for some specific reasons, because when you do that, you'll be more committed to working hard for your race. Your message will come through as more authentic and true. And I think it'll resonate with more people.
One thing I forgot to ask you about the job of insurance commissioner itself. One of the things here in the Mises Caucus that we're concerned about and we promote is political decentralization. So how does, is there anything that the federal government's doing that you would could take on and try to change or highlight? So how does that work?
Well, I'm all about the decentralization of all the things. So this role doesn't have any federal government responsibility, so to speak. However, I can certainly have impact in conversation and plan to. So I don't get to vote on anything in DC, but I can have conversations with Congress people. I can go to the committee hearings. I don't plan on spending much of my time in DC. There's enough broken here at the Washington level. I want to focus my energy here just for a handful of reasons, but what will work federally as much as we think is prudent and pragmatic, really. Sure. With that said, all the federal regulations that affect health insurance in Washington, I think are wrong and unconstitutional, need to be removed. The federal government shouldn't have a single ounce of say in how Washingtonians buy insurance or healthcare. And I find that even liberals here in Washington that maybe don't like President Trump are starting to understand why this decentralization idea is key. And the conservatives that had frustration with Obama, are also fearful of Joe Biden winning in 2020. So, you know, people are starting to wake up to the decentralization issue. And even locally here, one of the pieces of platform I have to decentralize our state government is, like, my position, for example, has 240 employees. Okay. Instead of housing all 240 of those employees that work for me all in one central government department where most of the state has to, you know, drive three, four, 5 hours to go visit, I want to make work with regional offices and decentralize it. The key there, of course, from a libertarian perspective, is to do it for cheaper than what we're already doing. So right. There's no additional offices here or additional spending. We're going to reduce government overhead and then spend what we are spending a little bit smarter. And we vetted that out with, like I said, some of those city council and county council members that have endorsed me. We vetted this project out. So we will have buildings all around the state of Washington where I can house employees at a cheaper cost, which also increases the market for what we can hire people from. So employment, what's the right way to say this? We'll have more skilled workers to choose from, essentially.
Right.
But most importantly, and this is the crux of it all, when I first got involved into activism, I realized if I wanted to have my voice heard, I had to take a day off of work, burn a day of vacation, burn a day of sick leave to go to the state capitol, have my voice heard. And then there was usually lobbyists in line ahead of me that got to get their voice heard, and then I wouldn't get the meeting. Right, doing this decentralization, giving you an insurance commissioner's office in the far reaches of all four corners of Washington will make it so a Washington citizen that has issues with government will actually have a dang desk to go pound their fist on. With somebody that has issue with their insurance, they'll have a desk to go pound on and somebody to look in the eye and express their frustrations. I think that empowers our communities, that empowers the individual, and I think it's a step in the right direction to the real deep cutting reforms that we know as libertarians need to be done.
Right. So what do you hope to accomplish between now and August 4th? What do you need to do and how can people help you, whether they're in Washington or around the country?
Well, three things. We need phone bankers. I absolutely need help with that. We've got scripts written. For those that are less experienced, for those that are more experienced, so just give you an idea of the direction we want to go on a given call. It makes it easy to get through lots of calls real quickly. We'd love to coach you and help you do that. People locally, we're not canvassing neighborhoods to knock on doors in the traditional sense with the virus issue. So instead, we're just doing lit drops. And you can hit 50, 60 doors in a night real quickly, just walking after dinner, you know, taking the dog for a walk. So I need help with those two things near and far. Social media help. If I need a social media army, anybody that can be getting on news articles in the state of Washington, dropping my website, dropping my Facebook links. You know, we saw what we could do just over the last couple of weeks with the Joe Jorgensen poll things that have come out on Twitter. We can push the social media conversation if we get behind our candidates. So, and then of course, money. You know, I've raised $75,000 this far. Every dollar we raise between now and August 4th, that is going to go to more advertising. And, every $500 can get us in front of 10, 20,000 eyes. And that can swing an election. We just dropped about 10 grand to do about 450,000 text messages to known primary voters. Okay. So we're swinging the last couple votes here our direction, but any money we can raise the next few weeks definitely helps drive that home. And, you know, one easy, fun way you could do that, buy a bumper sticker on anthonywelty.com. We got beer koozies. If it wasn't 10:45 in the morning here, I might have one to display for you.
Right.
But t-shirts, you know, buy some swag at anthonywelty.com or just drop $20 in, drop $100 in, and it'll help us a lot.
Sure. I'm going to send out an email, our weekly email to the Mises Caucus email list this week. And I'll mention the phone banking. If they want to do that, how do they get in touch with the right people in your campaign?
Yeah, well, the Mises Caucus folks out here in Washington have been great. They've been real active the last about 6-8 months or so. It's been really encouraging to see some new blood. So thank you guys. You know, shout out to Whitney and Miguel and John Bowen and so many others here that I apologize if I can't remember everybody's name off the top of my head here, but that energy has been great. You can reach out to my campaign manager if you're listening to this, manager@anthonywelty.com. Or you can just pop into my Facebook page and send us a DM, right? Okay. We respond to all those. We've got a big, real campaign. We've got over 100 volunteers right now. We've got, all types of there are all levels of interaction we could use from people. If you got an hour, great. If you got 100 hours, even better, right? We'll take any amount of help you can give us.
Okay, so the website is anthonywelty.com, W-E-L-T-I. Anything else you want people to know before we say goodbye?
Believe in our principles. When we're consistent in them, when we're patient with the process and the likelihood of how long some of this reform is going to take, but trust those principles. They will win. I'm seeing it every single day on the ground right now. I'm winning people by the buckets. Be encouraged by this campaign because it's showing what we can do when we put our mind to it and we put in the extra effort and we have good game plans. So, and then beyond that, I appreciate your help. You know, follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. Hashtags are BeFree and hashtag Welty, the number 4 WA. And, get involved with the campaign. If you're a memester, my meme game is terrible, guys. Insurance commissioner, no, everybody's like, what's that? How do I make a meme for that? I don't know. Come up with some kick-ass memes. It'd be really cool.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good. Well, I really, learned a lot today and, I needed a jolt of, optimism, today. And I certainly got that from hearing how hard you're working on things. So, I wanted to say something about you're right, Whitney and Miguel. I got to meet at the convention, and I'd known Whitney already online, and they're both great. And I'm sure that I've heard nothing but good things about what's going on out there. And yeah. Mike Pickens is also a friend of mine and a really great guy. So I'm glad he's on your team out there too.
Yeah, we're getting a lot done. You know, liberty is not going to happen overnight, unfortunately, but hopefully we'll see it in our lifetime. And, you know, it just takes each of us doing a little bit more tomorrow than we did today, frankly. You know, sacrifice that little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, because we know that they're going to continue to take. Yep. And we are the peaceful revolution. We have the best ideas. And I'm just so glad that I found libertarianism. And now it's part of who I am, you know, and it's not about politics. It's about, you know, being able to live our lives as free humans.
Yep. Well, Anthony Welty, thanks for coming on Decentralized Revolution. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
There you have it. I'd like to thank Anthony Welty for his time and for running a great campaign and representing our Libertarian Party very well. I'd also like to thank Dave versus Goliath for all the music you hear on Decentralized Revolution. And I'd like to thank everyone who gives to Mises PAC at TakeHumanAction.com. And everyone who shares, rates, reviews, and subscribes to Decentralized Revolution. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.